Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart and Soul Reflections on Purpose, Passion, and Perseverance. I'm Jory Fisher, your host, and joining me today, October 20th, 2010, is my friend and co-host Beth Gonzani, as well as our distinguished and delightful guest, Monica Parker. Beth, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. I'm actually a little north of San Francisco. It's a little foggy, but today's going to be beautiful.
And what are you doing out there? You might want to tell our listeners.
Well, I've come for a couple of workshops and also to do a little bit of sightseeing with a friend. And one is the Spiritual Marketing Quest, which was put on by Jeffrey Van Dyke and Suzanne Faldebarns, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And the second is a voice dialogue course with Tim Kelly and Carol Kamen, and I'm really excited about getting into relationship with some more of my parts.
And so for some people who don't know what we're talking about, that's going to sound really out there. But, hey, you know, That's okay. That's okay.
Well, I can explain a little bit later if you think it's appropriate.
Okay, that's cool. Well, glad you could join us at 9 a.m. out there from the West Coast. And Monica, welcome to you. How are you doing today?
Hi, I am great today. I am delighted to be on Heart and Soul. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so happy, and we'll be hearing a lot more from you a little bit later. Right now, I just want to extend an especially warm welcome to those of you who are listening to Heart and Soul for the first time. We hope you'll consider doing four things to help us spread the word about this radio show. Number one, mark Heart and Soul a favorite, if you would please, by clicking on the little red heart on our Blog Talk Radio show page. Number two, follow Heart and Soul by clicking on the follow button on our show page. Number three, tweet Heart and Soul, either from our show page or directly from my website, womenfindpurpose.com. And finally, number four, add the Blog Talk Radio player for this show directly to your website or blog. You can get that little player image straight from the Heart and Soul Radio page. Pretty cool. And for your convenience, you can also download each show as an MP3 or to iTunes directly from our Heart and Soul show page on blogtalkradio.com. So I know that was a lot. If you can do any of them, that would be great. So Monica Parker, warm welcome to you. Would you please give us just a few words about what we'll be discussing today?
Absolutely. I'd be delighted to do that. So one of the things we're going to talk about for sure is a three-step strategy for making a career change. You know, that's one of those topics that can become really complex really quickly. So I love simple strategies, and that's what that will be. And then we'll also talk about how, you know, sometimes when you're suffering in your career, you feel like you're all alone. The truth is you are not by yourself. There are lots of folks, unfortunately, who are experiencing the same pangs. And last but not least, venting is not the same thing as taking action. I think a lot of us are really good at complaining and griping, so we want to help you get past that today.
Oh, very good. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And then Beth, before we launch into Monica's introduction and interview, would you please tell everybody a little bit about who we are, what we do, and the context and format for our show?
I sure will, and I'm really also excited to hear Monica's interview. So sounds like I could hear some of that. So I am Beth Gonzani. I'm a life, leadership, and true purpose, and also a dream coach. I live in Rockport, Massachusetts.
Monica, can you hear us?
I can hear you guys.
Okay, I'm from Rockport, Massachusetts, which is
Monica?
A little north of Boston.
Yes, I'm here.
Monica, can you hear me? It's Beth.
Yeah, I can hear you, Beth.
Okay, we're going to keep going. I think Jory is having trouble for some reason. Okay, great.
Okay.
Technology. Jory, and I also have a background in human resources. I used to be a chief HR officer in both high-tech and healthcare. Jory is a career, calling, and true purpose coach, and she's from Lynchburg, Virginia, and she has a background in law and academia and also Christian ministry. And both Jory and I, if you've listened to any of the shows, you'll know this, are just extremely passionate about helping people find their life purpose. And we're also trained and highly skilled in doing so. I've been certified in what's called the True Purpose Process, which has been developed by Tim Kelly, and Jory's in the process of becoming certified. And we both work with individuals and also groups by telephone and also in person, which is wonderful. We can work with people across the globe. If you'd
right.
like to find out more information about our services, interplanetary perhaps. Who knows, someday. But if you'd like to find more information out about our services, you can go ahead and email me, Beth Scanzani, that's S-C-A-N-Z-A-N-I, Beth Scanzani at AOL.com, or you can contact Jory through her own website, womenfindpurpose.com, and you can find out more about True Purpose, Life Purpose, and all of the other services that Jory and I provide. But today's show is not about us as much as it's about having our guest Monica and also just sharing with you our vision. Jory and I, when we got together and created Heart and Soul for Blog Talk Radio, really, really wanted to have a place where you can be, where you can come, you can listen, you can be inspired, you can be encouraged, and you can find support. You can listen to people who are making a meaningful difference, not only in their own lives, but also the lives of others across the globe. And here we hope you can get insight also into your own life purpose and how you can express your unique life purpose to the fullest. So our motivation also has to do with our own life purposes, and that is to help you find out more about who you are and how you're meant to use your gifts and talents in the world. So this is very purposeful for us.
Mm-hmm.
So you can listen to the shows live on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, by calling 347-326-9296. Or anytime, you can listen online to any of the archived or on-demand shows by going to blogtalkradio.com and just type in Jory Fisher in the search box and pick whichever shows you wish to hear. During Monica's interview today, I'm going to monitor the chat room and see if you have any questions or comments. And you do, by the way, have to register with Blog Talk Radio first if you want to participate in the chat room. You can just go to blogtalkradio.com's homepage and do that. If you've listened to some of the shows, or checked out Jory's website in the past, you'll notice that each week we offer coaching suggestions to help you to experience and integrate the information that our guests have so generously shared. And so following Monica's interview today, she's going to give you some coaching suggestions. And then Jory and I will discuss some of our own reflections on purpose, passion, and perseverance and give you a preview of next week's episode of Heart and Soul. Jory, I think hopefully that covers the context. Is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, that's great. Well, one thing that just has to do with you ladies, just bear with me. I've already dropped off of the radio show twice and had to call back in. I know. I think I'm having a little trouble with Firefox, with all due respect to Firefox. So if that happens, Beth, could you just pick up, and I'll call back in.
I sure will.
All right, dear. I appreciate it. And Monica, I know you can hold your own as well, so that's great. So anyway, well, let me go ahead and introduce Monica. Monica Parker helps unhappy lawyers find and pursue fulfilling work outside of the practice of law through her company, LeavingTheLaw.com. A graduate of Harvard College and Harvard Law School, Monica has pursued a number of her passions, from working in film development for Spike Lee to teaching negotiation at Harvard Law School, to helping lawyers create their dream careers. She is the author of What It Takes, How Women of Color Can Thrive Within the Practice of Law, and The Unhappy Lawyer, A Roadmap to Finding Meaningful Work Outside of the Law. So, Monica, is there anything that you would like to add to that introduction?
Well, I was chuckling, Jory, as you were reading it, and I'm thinking there are actually a few other careers that are stuck in there as well, so perhaps we'll cover those today, too.
Okay. That would be great. Well, why don't we just launch right into it, Monica, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit about maybe some of your career changes, and including, of course, why you decided to leave the practice of law.
Sure. So let's just go back in time a little bit, and I'll give you the progression, basically. After college, I had the good, great fortune to work for Spike Lee for a couple of years at his film company, 40 Acres and a Mule Film Works. I was doing development work for Spike. He had an executive production deal with Universal Pictures, and so it was my job to check out all the scripts that poured into the office, as well as go to film festivals and read lots of scripts, plays, see movies. Fantastic first job out of college.
Wow.
So that was a dream job. Well, and I'll try to be as brief as I can with these, because I know we have a ton of questions we want to get to. But essentially after that, I had the urge to move back to Georgia, my home state, to Atlanta. Didn't know what I wanted to do. My older brother said, "You like grocery stores a lot. I know there's a management training program at one of them. Why don't you go check it out?" So I did. So I spent 2 years, the first year in management training program for a grocery chain, Southeastern grocery chain. And then the second year, I was an assistant manager at a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was there, I thought, this working thing, it's a lot of work, interestingly enough. So perhaps I'll consider going back to school now.
Mm-hmm.
So I considered my options and thought that law school would give me the most options.
Right.
And decided to go back to Harvard to go to law school. Of course, did that for 3 years. And when I came out of law school, I practiced at a large firm in Atlanta. And also around that same time, because I'd done quite a bit of conflict resolution training and consulting work in law school, mm-hmm. I had the option to continue to do that work as well. So after about a year of practice, I decided I wanted to test that out. I went back to the law school to teach as a lecturer on law
mm-hmm.
in the negotiation field, and then I spent about a year or so doing work in that field. And then I thought, I don't know if I gave law a fair shot. So then I went back to the law from a large firm to a boutique. I switched from IP litigation, intellectual property litigation, mm-hmm. to employee benefits, a total shift.
It is.
From there, after 4 years, that's when I decided to make my leap out of the practice. So, and one of your questions was, why did you leave the practice
mm-hmm.
of law?
Mm-hmm.
So let me address that before I do. I love to tease people and say, film, grocery, law. You do see the connections, right?
Yeah, right, of course.
They're so obvious. So in any case, why did I leave the practice of law? Well, I was very fortunate. I worked for two fantastic firms here in Atlanta, made some good friends, did some good work, and unfortunately, I was still not engaged in my work. Engagement's not for everybody, but it's very important to me, and I am guessing, based upon the premise for Heart and Soul, that it's important to the two of you as well.
Amen.
So I need to be fully engaged in what I'm doing and really feeling as if I'm making a difference in the lives of people. So it was a very difficult decision, of course, and leaving the law is not necessarily an easy thing to do after 3 years of, learning how to think like a lawyer and then taking the bar exam and practicing. You really build up a working identity the way you would in any other career.
Right.
And so it was extremely challenging, but I knew that engagement was the most important thing for me, and I knew, most importantly, that life was short.
Mm-hmm.
Knew that from personal experience, actually. Back in 2005, that was my last year of practice. Before I really made the decision to leave, I was having pretty severe migraines.
Mm.
And I decided I'd go to a doctor about those, and I was going to do an MRI, something that's pretty simple. They shot me up full of the contrast dye. Lo and behold, it turns out I'm allergic to the contrast dye.
Oh, no. So
went into anaphylactic shock, and I actually remember as I was, lying there, going through all of that, which, of course, was an extremely traumatic experience, I remember talking to God at that point and saying, I haven't done the things I wanted to do. I think that there's a lot more that you have for me to do. I don't quite know what it is yet. I have some ideas, but I'm not positive. If I could have a little bit more time. And I was very fortunate. I think I had a 50-50 shot of making it. Fortunately, I did. And so that really made a strong impression upon me. And it was shortly after that I left the practice.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that really tells you life is short, limited time.
Yeah.
There are things you need to do. Get to doing them and quit, sort of worrying about it or complaining about it and not taking action. So that's
right.
my career change story.
Wow, that's fantastic.
life change.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Any regrets?
No, no regrets. And I have to tell you, with all the clients I've worked with at this point, it's been about 5 years, no regrets from them either. I think that a lot of us have that, even if not the, you know, the life or death experience, we've all certainly had that sensation of we have a limited time on this earth, and if we're here to serve a purpose, it would behoove us to figure out what that purpose is and then go after it.
Hey, Beth, does that sound familiar?
Yes, it does. Just a little bit.
Can you see why Monica is such a great guest for this radio show?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. Well, you know, I know a lot of lawyers out there, and I know a lot of lawyers who'd love to leave, but they just can't do it. Why do you think that is, Monica?
There are a couple things going on there. The first one is something I mentioned earlier, and let me really dig into that a bit. You form a working identity. When you spend that amount of time in law school and you take the bar exam and then you go practice, that working identity gets ingrained in you.
Right.
You've learned how to think like a lawyer and then go do that as your work, and it can be very challenging to now say, I want to do something else after having spent so much time and typically, you know, more than $100,000 to do it.
Yeah.
So there's sort of what's going on for you internally. The second piece is externally. It's often challenging for lawyers to find support from people who are in their lives when they want to make this kind of change. It sounds a little crazy to other folks, and they're typically not shy about voicing that. So that's another thing that keeps us there. I think the third thing is, well, you've spent all that money. Now you typically have some debt.
Yes.
And if you've gotten one of those six-figure jobs, say at you know, one of the large firms across the country, not only do you have your law school debt, but you begin to develop lifestyle debt. So you end up with a set of golden handcuffs. So if you look at sort of the practical pieces as well as the, I'd say, the mental stuff that's going on, it can be very, very challenging to make that shift.
Exactly. Wow. Well, you know, Monica, we have not only you on this call who's done it. I'm on the call and I've done it. And I can see from one of our listeners out there who's called in, it looks like we're going to have a third person on the call who's done it. So lawyers can leave and still be happy. And
there
I'm hoping Julie Fleming will join us when we have a chance for people to call in and actually comment. So it'll be good to hear her perspective as well. Well, tell us about this three-step process that you teased us with in the beginning.
Sure, and let me just preface this by saying the three-step process is for anybody who's interested in making a career change. This is not just for lawyers. And I can't even take credit for this three-step process. This was developed by Richard Bowles, who wrote What Color Is Your Parachute? I believe 2010 edition is out now. And I don't think it's in that book necessarily. It's in another book that he wrote about career counseling. Nonetheless, fantastic process. So here are the steps. Number one is, what do you want to do? So for some of us, we have a pretty clear sense of what we want to do next. So write that down. For others, we have some ideas. And if that's the case, you write those down. And for some of us, we are completely clueless, and that's okay. what Richard Bowles talks about is you don't have to have clear, defined ideas. Just start with your gut. Start with your intuition. Start with what you think might be appealing to you, because you're going to be doing some exploring. Making a career transition isn't about, you know, just moving from point A to point B. There is a process in between. So the first thing I recommend that my clients do is make a list of possibilities that appeal to them. And I say start from childhood. When you were a child, there were probably some career dreams that you had. Put them on the list, even if they seem illogical at this point, you know, being a cowboy, for example, or being an astronaut, or, you know, a professional ballerina, whatever the case may be. Put those down. Also think about what you were thinking about doing when you were in college. You know, as I mentioned, after college, I went to work for Spike Lee. I thought I was going to be in film for the rest of my life, and thought that'd be pretty exciting. So put those choices down. For those of us who are currently in careers, it can be hard to think outside of the box, so that's why I'm having you take the step back into the past. For the future, if you don't have any sort of future ideas, that's the time to really do some exploring. I encourage my clients to carry a little notebook around, and anytime anything catches your attention, it goes on the list. So if you are in the bookstore and there's a book on pastry making and you are just fascinated by it, that goes on the list. If you hear about someone opening a dive shop in Costa Rica and that appeals to you, put it on your list. If you overhear a conversation about someone doing something fascinating, just put it on your list. So for now, it's just about creating a list of possibilities, allowing your mind to be open to those ideas. Again, I'm not suggesting you'll make the change tomorrow, but we do want to be open to whatever appeals to us, because typically if it's something that really excites us and engages us, after we go through that exploration process, we can start building up our courage muscle to even contemplate making that change. So all the ideas are welcome on the list. So that's
courage
that's
muscle.
Number one.
I love that.
So step number one is, what do you want to do? Step number two, and this is a favorite one for lawyers, probably for almost all humans, it's what's getting in the way. We love to talk about why we can't do the things that we want to do. And so it may feel a bit counterintuitive to actually write these things down, but it does serve a purpose. The purpose is to get all that garbage out of your head and onto a sheet of paper so that it's not just floating around there getting in the way. Also, it gives you the chance to assess how real is some of the stuff that you come up with. And Richard Bowles talks about the importance of reality testing. You know, if you say, I want to own a flower shop, but that, of course, means having my own business. I don't have any experience in having my own business. And my uncle Charlie told me that if you're going to have your own business, you need to be a whiz at accounting. So now we test whether or not Uncle Charlie knows what he's talking about. Because that's the other thing, is everybody loves to give us advice. The question is the advice accurate? So you want to test out the garbage that comes out of your head to see if it's real. If, in fact, you do need an accounting degree in order to own your own business, well, if we test it out, we find out that's not the case. You can either sort of learn the basics yourself, or you could hire someone to take on that role. So that changes your perspective on whether or not owning a flower shop is something you can do. So that is the next step, what's getting in the way. The third step is, what do you want to do about it? Because often we get stuck at step number two. We say, oh, this just feels so impossible. I did the reality testing, Monica said, and I just can't do this. Well, it's time to figure out if you want to blast through those obstacles or not. And what I tell people is there's no shame in this step. If you look at a possibility and you feel like, you know what, if there are just too many obstacles, they are real obstacles, it's too much, that's okay. You have a whole list of possibilities you're exploring, so just circle back to your list and take a stab at another one. So those are the three steps. What do you want to do? What's getting in the way? And what do you want to do about it?
That is pretty clean, isn't it?
Well,
I like
that. We call it simple but not easy, right?
It's
Well, I always think it's important to have structure.
Beth not only has this amazing coaching expertise going on, but she also has this career in human resources, so her as background. So, Beth, what's your take on this three-step process?
Well, it's very simple. It's very clear, and there's a lot to each step. I think if we had more time, we could probably go into each of the steps even further. How can people find out, Monica, if they want to know more about the steps when they've listened to the interview?
That is a great question. I'm going to actually walk over to my bookshelf and see if I see the name of that book by Richard Bowles. And I think even if I can't find it, it's going to be pretty simple, because it's the one book that he wrote that's about career counseling. So if you just looked up Richard Bowles and then here it is, The Career Counselor's Handbook. And so you can actually go there and look for more details on that process. Mm-hmm. And what I'll also mention, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just plug right here.
Yep.
If you purchase a copy of my book, The Unhappy Lawyer, A Roadmap to Finding Meaningful Work Outside of the Law, I go into detail on each of those steps, basically.
Great.
And I'll tell you this, too. One fun thing about the book is I didn't anticipate this, but, of course, friends and colleagues have read the book who are not lawyers, and they said, you know, your book is awesome. Even if you're not a lawyer, it's really helpful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, these steps apply to, you know, to anyone thinking about making a change, really, whether it's a career change or another kind of change. What do I want to do? What's in the way? And what am I going to do about it?
That's an excellent point, Beth. Excellent. I hadn't even thought about that. That's dead on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and a follow-up that I'm thinking about is, you mentioned that sometimes the external factors can be a problem, you know, like it's hard to get support. Well, what if friends and family are quite vocal about not supporting you, whether you're a lawyer or an engineer or whatever?
Absolutely. So that's a special challenge. You know, ideally, you've got a family that thinks, you know, the world of you and wants you to be happy, and so wants you to do absolutely anything that would allow you to make that happen. Same for friends, but we live in the real world where friends and family, even though they love us and support us and want what's best for us, often have a sense about what that is. And if what you want to do isn't in alignment with that, then they tend to balk. So the first thing is just to recognize that if we're talking about family and friends, and, of course, supportive family and friends, those folks do love you. It's not about the fact that they wish you, you know, ill will. It's mm-hmm, that they have mm-hmm. a sense of what they want for you. What I often have to coach my clients on, and I always issue this as a challenge, is if you discover that your friends and family are not being supportive, stop talking to them about it. There is this thing, I don't know if it's just lawyers or if it's humans here again. I think it's humans, actually. We have this desire to convince people around us.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I don't know what that is, but it's so human. And so it does not serve you here. It takes enough energy to make a transition without adding on this additional challenge. So the truth of the matter is, if you're talking to your spouse about making a change and your spouse is belittling you or ridiculing you or thinks it's funny or cute or, you know, has put their foot down about it, my advice is to not discuss this with that person until you're at a point where you're almost ready to make the change, because mm-hmm. your dreams are so fragile at this stage.
Right.
So what you really want to do, and it's hard to go it alone, is to find people who will support you. Almost everybody I know has that friend who thinks the world of you and who's very mm-hmm. upbeat and cheerful, and when you say, I don't want to be a dentist anymore. I actually want to go work for Cirque du Soleil. Everybody's got that friend who goes, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That's the person you want to turn to at a time like this, not the friend who says, have you lost your mind? Those people are not helpful. So even if the dentist decides not to go work for Cirque du Soleil because they've been willing to stretch and to work with supportive people, they're going to end up doing something else that's phenomenal, or heck, maybe even going to work for Cirque du Soleil because they have that kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a friend. It could be a family member who's like that. It could be a colleague, someone you develop a relationship with as you go along, or gee, you're talking to, what, three coaches right now? It could mm-hmm. be a coach.
And I have another thing to throw in. It could also be, a spiritual guidance of some sort.
Absolutely.
Like, even if people aren't helping you out, well, then maybe God is or something.
Hello,
you know?
There's an idea. We're never alone, and I do believe that he put us here for a purpose or a few different purposes. So a part of my process in my own career shifts, and also, you know, when I'm working with a client who is faith-based, it is checking in spiritually to say, well, what does he have for me? What does he want me to do? How can he help you when everyone else around you is not being so helpful? It's nice to know that you're never alone.
Exactly.
There's one other thing I'd like to just throw in here. That is that often, you know, of course, change is hard for people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us when we're thinking about a change. And then for the people around us,
mm-hmm.
it's scary for them because they think, oh, what does this mean? You know, is Beth going to change? Or is Monica going to change? And, you know, what's going to happen if she does this? You know, are they going to lose interest in me? Or are we going to have
yes.
to move someplace?
So
there are all these questions that come up. But the other thing that also comes out is that people have their own, you know, issues that get triggered
mm-hmm.
by changes and by other people making changes. So sometimes the concerns that they have are for you. Sometimes the concerns that they have are actually for them. And I think it's important
yeah.
to try to separate which of these are true for me
mm.
and which of these are the other person really just going through their own reaction to what I'm doing and having their, you know, and highlighting their own issues.
Oh, that is so true.
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So true. I always say when you're doing this, when you're going through, and like you said, Beth, whether it's a career transition or anything else, any other kind of transition, what's happening also is, and this is just a expansion of what you're saying, you're holding a mirror up in front of that other person's face.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're willing to make changes, you're being bold, courageous,
yeah.
like whatever the word may be,
right.
all of a sudden it
right.
causes people to look in that mirror and say, wait, what about me?
Yeah.
What is it I need to do? What is it I need to change? And isn't this really scary? So absolutely,
yeah.
it calls up a lot of, I think, stuff in other people. And you're right. You have to figure out, well, what is this? Is this about me or is this about the other person? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ladies, I want to interject here. I believe we have another coach on the line who might want to weigh in. Julie, are you there?
I am here, Jory. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. And everybody, this is Meet Julie Fleming. And Monica, of course, you know her quite well. And Beth, I don't believe you've had the pleasure, but Julie was on Heart and Soul when I was with another organization. And so Julie has had the pleasure of joining me before. And Julie, welcome. What would you have to say today?
Thank you, Jory. I am so enjoying listening to this, and I'm sitting here wishing that when I went through my own transition leaving the practice, I guess it was a little over 5 years ago now, I wish I could have heard this conversation and heard the wisdom that y'all are sharing, so thank you. And I actually have a question. Monica, you know I love your three-step process. I love what you share in your book. And there's another piece that I struggled with hugely, and that is the identity piece. You know, you go to a cocktail party, and almost the first question is, so what do you do? And I found that my identity was tied up so much in being able to say, well, I'm a lawyer.
Yep.
Especially because when you say I'm a lawyer, people know what that means. 5 years ago, when you say, oh, I'm a coach, the question I would get was, oh, really? So do you coach soccer?
Right.
So, you know, I have made it through this, but I would love to hear your thoughts on identity and on sort of the mental shift of changing the coats and all of that you
Absolutely.
Go through when you're changing this process.
Fantastic question. And you and Julie, you know me well enough to know that I will answer it, and then, of course, I'll turn it back on you.
your
responses as well. It's a really important question, and actually the first thing it makes me think of is another wonderful resource called Working Identity. It's a book by an author named Herminia Ibarra. I'll just spell that real quick. H-E-R-M-I-N-I-A, Herminia. Ibarra, I-B-A-R-R-A, Working Identity. It's available typically at bookstores and also Amazon.com. Wonderful resource because it addresses just the question that Julie is talking about. And that's something that, Julie, just so you know, I struggled with as well. It can be very challenging to figure out, you know, who you're going to be and what you're going to say after you make that kind of a shift. And especially, as you mentioned, with being a lawyer, everybody understands what that is and what it means and what it entails. And there's also prestige and status often attached to it. We all know, of course, there are a lot of lawyer jokes and people are constantly making disparaging comments. Nonetheless, a lot of people really do respect lawyers. So that's a hard part of the shift. And that's why it's so important to recognize that making a career transition isn't about just leaping from point A to point B, from lawyer to, and we'll just use the example, coach. All right, because that's something we're all familiar with. When you make that shift, it's not as simple as one day I quit my law practice and the very next day I hang out my coaching shingle. There's a whole sort of mental process that goes on in the interim, a transformation, if you will. And the way you do that is you don't just make the leap. You actually start by doing what Herminia describes in her book as, twofold. You're going to start by doing projects. And then you're also going to meet other people. Let me address each of those individually. Starting with projects means you dip your toe in the water. So let's say you did want to become a coach, for example. Maybe you go take an introductory coaching class through a program. Maybe you sign up for a series of coaching classes. Perhaps you actually take on a few coaching clients, whether it's pro bono or for a fee. You begin to dabble in the field. You begin to immerse yourself in the field so that you can see what it feels like, and more importantly, you can see what it's like for you to be that person, to be
put that coat on.
The coach. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Put the coat on. So that's the first thing, is that you begin to experience what it feels like. You also begin to experience how good it feels to fit, to put on a coat that fits, versus the lawyer coat, which you know that you can wear and you know it, you can do a good job at it, and it probably looks, you know, pretty good on you, but it doesn't feel that good, versus when you immerse yourself in a career that really engages you and pulls you to it, you feel so very different. So I think that's the first part of the mental shift, is begin to see yourself as that person. The second part, I said, is meeting people. You have to go out there and find your tribe. So for those of us who practice law, yeah, we made some friends and we enjoyed perhaps our work to some extent. Julie, I think you really enjoyed practicing law. So we know that that's one community for you. It can be scary, again, to just make a shift from A to B and not know anybody in that particular field. So, again, you know, I saw it as my responsibility to first do some informational interviews with other coaches so I can see what the field's like, but more importantly, to begin to develop relationships.
Yeah.
And hire my own coach. Again, that made sense in this particular process. Meet other coaches through coaching associations or activities that were going on. The reason you're doing this is not only because it gives you more information about a field, but also it shows you where you fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even more importantly, when you begin to make friends in your field, those are the people who are going to pull you over to the other side. They're going to support you, challenge you, encourage you, and say, come on over here. The water is pretty warm. So you need to have both of those aspects. I think that's where the mental transformation occurs, Julie, that you were asking about.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I got to follow up and ask you, so how did you do it?
You know, I did much of what you have described, but not nearly so gracefully. Not in any sense of process. It was just sort of staggering and stumbling around and falling into it. And I think another piece that really came out for me that also, I think, kind of fits in the context of this show is I started to get connected in terms of purpose in a very different way from what I understand about purpose now, granted. But I got connected with why I was doing this. And that even though you're absolutely correct, Monica, I am one of the lawyers who really loved practice. But there was something about that coat that wasn't right for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so I connected with what I was moving into. I also started to see myself not as, oh, I'm a lawyer named Julie, but I'm Julie, and I'm a lawyer. I always will be, even if I'm not practicing. As those of us who've been lawyers know, you can't get away from it. So there's that piece. But I'm also a coach, and I'm also a knitter, and I'm also someone who loves music, and, you know, all of these different things. And I suspect that it makes it a little more challenging for the person who says, so, Julie, what do you do? But it's allowed me to have a very different kind of self-concept. And if at some point I ever stop being a coach, I think it will be much easier for me to move into whatever I become at that point, because I'll see it as another aspect of who I am, another expression of who I am.
Yeah,
not
very good.
All of who I am, and not that the title and I are synonymous, and therefore, if the title doesn't fit anymore, I'm just kind of floating out there not knowing what I am.
Mm-hmm. Monica, the work that actually Julie, Beth, and I have all done on working on our own purposes, we have been able to ascertain our blessing, and the blessing we say in our purpose community has scalability. It's something that you were doing to some degree when you were 7. You'll be doing it again when you're 77. You can do it with one person, a small group, a large group. With the scalability, it doesn't matter. So that if you change your career, maybe to do something even more fulfilling or something where the coat fits a little better, you will be doing your blessing no matter what. It's not like you lose your sense of purpose if you switch. So, Julie, you talked about, you know, maybe at some point you might transition into something else. Well, you will still be, Julie, doing your blessing, perhaps in an even more fulfilling way. So I think that's something that's nice, is that our purpose is our purpose wherever we are. And what's really wonderful is if we can actually be doing our purpose, doing our blessing in a situation where we're using our gifts and talents and actually the purpose is fitting the vocation or the job or the career.
That sounds so comforting, too, I think, to know that your purpose goes with you throughout your life. And as you said,
right,
there's scalability to it, so it's ever-changing and ever-growing, but you are still living it. It's called a blessing, but it also sounds like a blessing.
Yes. It's how we bless other people with who we are and what we do. It's really neat. Well, can we talk about the practical? You know, what is it if what you want to do doesn't pay the bills?
That's such a tough one. You know, I have a lot of clients and end up talking to a lot of lawyers who tend to be, surprise, surprise, very creative people. And what that means is, you know, creativity, of course, runs the gamut, but a lot of them often want to have their own businesses, and others are truly creative, meaning artistic, and they want to have businesses that allow them to express themselves artistically. So it can be very challenging to contemplate going from a six-figure salary, complete with six-figure debt, potentially family obligations, and lifestyle obligations, to something that is going to pay you a lot less. So the first thing to figure out, and this is what I talk to a lot of my clients about, is to get clear. So a lot of this stuff, again, is just sort of junk or garbage that's spinning around in the brain. So the first thing is to figure out, what I want to do, what is the salary range? or, you know, what could I potentially expect from having a business mm-hmm. like this? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times we're just saying to ourselves, there's no way I can do this. That's not helpful. So we really do have to dig in a bit and say, first, let's get clear. How much can I expect to earn doing this? Secondly, how much money do I both need and how much money do I want? Because they're two very different questions. Mm-hmm. The reason I bring that up is because often I'll have a client who wants to make a shift, say, to owning a business. I'm thinking back to one of my clients here. Okay to mention her by name? She's fine with it, but are you all okay with that as well on your show?
If she's fine, it's great.
Her name is Erin Hill, A-H-A-R-O-N, Erin Hill. And I spell her name because her website is erinhill.com, A-H-A-R-O-N, hill.com. She is a lawyer turned photographer. When Erin was beginning to make her shift, all of these fears came up, absolutely. And so part of the process is if you're thinking about starting your own business and you're worried about whether or not you're going to pay your bills, again, that's not something that you just leap into. You have to figure out a process for that. So part of it is recognizing that this is the amount of money I need to live on. This is my budget so that when you make that kind of a shift, you're able to withstand the fact that you're not going to be making a lot of money to start, and you can give yourself a time period and know that over time your salary is going to grow. Mm-hmm. Same or income is going to grow. Same with, you know, if you need to completely switch careers and you're going to have to take a few steps back, it's recognizing you're not going to be making X amount of dollars for the rest of your life. In fact, you're probably, if you have any level of work experience, whether you're a lawyer or not, you're going to be able to bring that into your new job, your new position. And that's going to help you also advance in your career more quickly than if you were, say, just starting out right after college. So
yeah.
That's the need, figuring out what my budget is, what, you know, what I need money for. Part of that process is maybe beginning to cut back on some things. I have so many clients who spend money needlessly or mindlessly, I should say, because they're unhappy. So when you're unhappy,
Go
ahead and buy that Prada bag, or you take that last-minute trip to Barbados.
Good point.
Right? Whereas mm-hmm. if you were doing something that was fulfilling, perhaps you wouldn't want a Prada bag so much, or a trip, or, you know, cocktails every Friday with
yeah.
your other miserable friends. So it's really figuring out where are you mindlessly spending your money and getting clear about that, because it may be possible for you to cut back on some of that stuff right now and start putting money into your, you know, we call it the proverbial rainy day fund, or I call it the great escape fund.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the need. Now, the reason why I mentioned need versus want is because, again, this isn't about limiting you to the point where you now have to spend the rest of your life living on ramen noodles and living in a shack. That's not the point. The point is to get you to where you can actually make the shift you want to make, and, again, then also dream about where you want your income to be. Because even if what you want to do doesn't pay the bills, I think it's fair to say that, certainly from my perspective, coaching is not the only thing that I do. I love my coaching practice, and I like a lot of diversity, a lot of variety. So I also do corporate training work.
Mm-hmm.
I also do some consulting work. Really, it's not looking at it as I have to just be doing one thing specifically, and that one thing isn't going to make me enough money, therefore I can not do that thing.
Right.
It's recognizing that there may be a way to cobble together, is what I like to call it, cobble together a way to cover your bills, your expenses, and mm-hmm. be able to do the things that you want to do. And I mentioned Erin earlier because after a few short years of getting her business going, it's booming now. She's
great.
An incredible photographer.
Excellent.
If you see her work, you think, she had no business practicing law.
Oh.
Just as if you hear Julie coach, you think, she had no business. I know she liked it, but she had no business doing that. So she's not very good at it.
Yeah. And I think that there is some research to, I believe that there's research to support what I'm saying, that once we have been successful, the way our brains are wired and the way we think, we will tend to repeat that pattern. So if we create a successful career in law or human resources or photography or whatever it is, we have that mental model, that those connections in our brain, that model for success. That we can duplicate with something else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Beth, if the research isn't there, it should be. So let's just stake that out.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, but I believe I've heard it in the context of research, but I can't quote the research.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. Well, what about fear?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned fear a little bit earlier, Monica, and
mm-hmm.
be curious how you handled it. Beth, how you handled it, if you did. And Julie, how you handled it, if you did, what do we do?
Yeah, fear, it's one of those things. We actually talk in the coaching language about something called a gremlin. And there's actually another wonderful resource here called Taming Your Gremlin, a wonderful book that talks about the concept. The gremlin basically is your internal voice. It could be called the saboteur, the committee. It's that voice in your head that tells you all those negative, nasty things when you're trying to make a change. And just so you know, when you are trying to make big life changes, whether it's career or life changes, the gremlin or gremlins pop up. And they begin to whisper all these, you know, very seductive, mean, obnoxious things to you, like, what are you thinking? This is crazy. Who are you to make a change? You're going to fail. Everyone's laughing at you. People think you're crazy. Just all that stuff that pops into our head. So that's the first thing, is to begin to recognize that that's your gremlin versus reality. They're two different things. Often we confuse the two. I often encourage my clients to get really clear on what the gremlin's trying to tell them. In fact, write it down. Again, because once we begin to see it and bring it to light, gremlin prefers dark, cramped spaces. It doesn't want you opening your mind with lots of light. It wants you to just sort of listen to it and not really realize it's there. So the first step is just to recognize that that's what fear is. It's just one of the gremlins, or maybe even more, in your brain that are telling you these things. The second thing that I like to tell people is that, and this I think is challenging, but with a lot of my clients I say, well, here's the thing about fear. It's actually okay to be afraid and to go on and do what it is that you want to do, which is why I often say career change is not just that switch from A to B, it's the steps. And I always advocate for baby steps. So if you're frightening yourself with this change, it may mean that you're looking at it as sort of this huge, massive thing that you need to do. So let's break it down into baby steps. If I say, if you want to make this shift, how about instead of we say that you leave your job tomorrow, how about you schedule an informational interview with somebody in the field you're interested in? Oh, I can do that.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So that's
very
another
good
thing, is to chunk things, bring them down into smaller steps.
Yep.
The other thing, too, is surprise, surprise. Let me give you a specific example on this one. Growing up, I've always been a bit of a performer. I've always loved performing. And, well, unfortunately, I got to law school and got slammed once in a law school class. It kind of created a fear there that wasn't there before. I believe that if there's a fear, I should run towards it rather than away from it. And that's probably a childhood characteristic more than anything else. But it's something I encourage my clients to do. So I actually love public speaking, and it also still frightens me quite a bit. Nonetheless, what do? How do I handle my fear? I still get up and speak.
Yep.
I do it all the time.
Yep.
I find that you can often lessen fears if you face them.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, let me give you, I'm trying to think, there's another resource. I believe his name is Steve Chandler. He wrote a book called Fearless. Just finished that on an airplane flight recently, and it's phenomenal. It talks about how it is possible to get past fear, and I think that's an intriguing proposition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Monica, I'm going to interrupt only because I'm concerned about the time. And Beth and Julie, I'd love to hear about your fears, but I want Monica to speak to a couple of other things, if that's all right. So briefly, can you just tell us, do you think everybody has something unique and special? I mean, based on what you've said so far, I have a feeling I know what your answer is, but if you could expound upon it, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yes. Everybody has something unique and special. I don't think that God put anybody on earth without something unique and special. I believe his word actually says that. Again, do we always know what our unique and special qualities are? No. Sometimes we have to take the time to discern them. And that could be a lifelong process, by the way. It's not necessarily something that people see right off the bat. There are those very fortunate people who know as children what their particular talents are. But for some of us, we have to dig a bit. And it also sounds as if the work that you guys do through True Purpose can help you discern that more quickly than not. Is that
very
exciting?
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. And thank you. Thank you for that plug.
It sounds exactly like that. And so that's awesome if you can short circuit the process a bit and get there sooner rather than later. But yes, everybody has something.
Mm-hmm. So with respect to that process, it sounds like you're also saying, and you know I'm asking a leading question here, so forgive me.
Well,
but
that's what we do.
that we shouldn't just rely on fate or chance. to bring about a lovely new career. Would that be an accurate statement?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, please, don't wait on that. You might be waiting the rest of your life for that. And that doesn't strike me as a viable option. I know that it seems like it'd be awesome if you just sat at your desk every day and then the phone rang and somebody offered you this amazing opportunity with the, you know, 6 or 7 figure salary and all the things you've ever wanted in your life. The people that I've known who've had that happen to him have actually been preparing for it and doing what they need to do to get to that point. I just don't think it's all just, you know, the phone rings. I think that you have to be prepared and you have to take the steps yourself. So please, please don't rely on fate or chance. That to me is setting yourself up for some serious disappointment or failure.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Well, what I'd love to do now is have you state a couple things. One, how people can reach you if they would like to connect with you further on how perhaps you can help them. And perhaps you could say something about your own life purpose and or how you're living a purposeful and or passionate life.
Okay, sure. So the way I can be reached is through my website, which is www.leavingthelaw.com, leavingthelaw.com. You can email me at monica@leavingthelaw.com, and it's Monica, M-O-N-I-C-A. So that's the best way to reach me. Let's see. Let me start with some of the ways that I'm currently living a purposeful and passionate life.
Nice.
It is, the first thing is I am connecting people. You mentioned true purpose. I have not been through that process. It sounds phenomenal, but I would say that one thing that has been with me since I was a child, and I think I'll have until the day I'm gone, is that I love connecting people. And that's in any number of ways, from two people I think would be great friends, connecting them, or two people I think could do business together, or whatever the case may be. That's a passion of mine. I'm also living a faith-filled life as a Christian. That's a lifelong endeavor for me, and that includes, you know, reading my Bible, meditating on it, as I mentioned earlier, understanding, discerning what God's purpose is for me so that I can make sure I'm living those out, you know, spreading the word about Christianity where the opportunity presents itself, and just also doing my best to live my life as a Christian, not trying to be perfect because nobody's perfect, but really trying to grow and learn in my faith. I'm also building financial independence so that I can better serve my family and friends and my community and the world. And I do that both in terms of my businesses, but also I am one of those very fortunate people who just discovered network marketing. So I also have a network marketing business that allows me to build passive revenue, and I am so excited about that.
Isn't that great? Yeah, mention yours.
Yes, mine is Send Out Cards. Send out cards, and if that's something you want to explore more, you can still get in touch with me through my website, and I'd be happy
Absolutely.
To show you that one. But there are so many of them, and they're all fantastic, so you just find one that really fits for you.
Very good.
And then last, I'm helping others uncover their callings. As I said at the very beginning, I do believe that life is short, and the sooner we can figure out what it is we're supposed to be doing, what the heck we're doing here, and we can get started on that, the better. So then, let's see, my life purpose, I think it was your last question, right?
It was. You are so good.
Okay. My life purpose is, again, to connect people, whether it's introducing the individual who's passionate about, say, the circus to a tightrope walker, connecting those two people, or connecting two folks who'd be great friends, or matching an individual with a job offer that a friend sent around. I really do get a real kick out of connecting people. It's one of those things where I would do it even without getting paid, and yes, let's be real, I am trying to build financial independence, so I do want to get paid for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to put in a plug right now and a note of thanks to Miss Julie, because Julie is the one who connected you and me, Monica.
See, that's right. That's a part of her life as well. She's really,
exactly.
really good at it.
Well, let's move into the coaching suggestion part of this, because each week we offer one or more suggestions so that we and our listeners can begin to integrate the information that our guests have shared. So, Monica, what would you suggest that we do today to help with this integration phase?
All right, here it is. Are you ready for it?
Mm-hmm.
Remember what it was like to be a child? Carefree, curious, joyful, playful, open, temper tantrums experienced, and then quickly let go, lots of laughter and fun. If you didn't want to do it, you didn't. Tap into that childlike nature. You still have it. It's that kind of energy and passion and excitement that will sustain you as you make your career transition. As adults, we tend to squelch that stuff. We call it immaturity. Nonsense. It's the essence of living a purpose-filled life. Think of any adults you know who love what they do. I'll bet they're exhibiting some, if not all, of the characteristics described.
Wow. Well, Beth, I've heard you talk about our need to be playful. What's your reaction to what Monica just said?
Oh, absolutely, and some of the things that I did as a child. You know, I used to teach the neighborhood kids. I used to pull out easels and get papers and books and teach classes.
Oh.
And good part of what I do now is teaching, and it makes me just feel so much myself and so passionate and so easy and fun and creative and those parts of myself that I really love. So I absolutely can relate to that, Monica.
That's beautiful, and I will post that on my website. So, Beth, do you want to just tell everybody just a little bit about how we'd love for folks to co-create the show with us?
Yeah, Joy, I think, you know, given time, we have said some of this earlier in the show, and I'll just remind people, please join us live. You can listen to the archives. You can download the MP3s. You can join us through the chat room or on the phone, as Julie has today. Go to Jory's website, jory@womenfindpurpose.com, and you can find the coaching suggestions. Try them out. There are some fabulous, fabulous coaching suggestions there on the website that each of our guest speakers has generously offered, you know, for you. Try them out. Let us know how they work. We really want together to help more and more and more people find true purpose, passion, and joy. So check out Jory's website, or you can contact me at Beth Scanzani, that's S-C-A-N-Z-A-N-I, at AOL.com.
Well, thank you so much. And Beth, would this be a good time for you to share who our guest will be next week?
I'd be happy to do that. Our guest next week is Denise Sterrett. And Denise is someone that I know and have worked with personally, and she is abundant joy. She, you know, exudes joy. Her show is going to be, well, imagine looking back on your life toward the end and feeling happy, joyful, rather than wondering, if only. You know, her work, Denise's work, is really to help people see who they truly are and to boldly express that truth as leaders. And she's got a background. She used to do human resources for global companies like Kraft and Cisco and Ernst & Young, so she's also made a career transition. She's lived in other countries like Paris and London. And then, you know, over the past few years, she came home and started a totally new chapter in her life. She took the True Purpose Program, stepped onto a very purposeful path, and that led her to create what she calls the Center for Energetic Leadership. And the mission for that is to empower women to experience the freedom of a life of their own choosing by leading from the truth of who they are.
Well, she sounds great.
She's going to talk more about that with us next week.
And that will dovetail nicely for folks who've listened to this interview. Well, this has been great.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Beth. Thank you, Monica. And thank you, Julie. Julie, can you just mention how people can reach you if they're inclined?
Sure. My website, is lifeatthebar.com. It's about lawyers, not cocktails. And my email is jaf@lifeatthebar.com.
Great. So Julie Fleming, lifeatthebar.com, another coach, another lawyer, another person who's living on purpose and with passion. So this is great. Well, everybody, you've been listening to Heart and Soul with Jory Fisher. I'm a calling, career, and true purpose coach from Lynchburg, Virginia, with Beth Scanzani, a life, leadership, true purpose, and dream coach from Rockport, Massachusetts, with our delightful guest, Monica Parker, from Atlanta, Georgia. And Julie, I think I can say that you're from Atlanta as well, though, of course, you're everywhere. So, Monica, would you please give us the quote?
Of course, it's one of my favorite quotes. It is, "Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" Poet Mary Oliver.
Oh, great. Well, thank
you. Love that.
And Monica, again, would you please state how people can reach you?
Sure. It's www.leadingthelaw.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening live and on the recording. Please visit my website at womenfindpurpose.com to find out more about my coaching and consulting services and to access all of our Heart and Soul archives. Each week, I do post the coaching suggestions of our guests as well as their quotes and bios. So Beth, would you like to say goodbye, and then Monica, and then Julie?
Yes, goodbye, everybody. Have a fabulous week.
Yeah, it's Monica. It's been a pleasure being on the show, and I wish you much success with your career change.
And this is Julie, and I have so enjoyed listening to y'all's wisdom, so thank you very much for letting me call in and play.
It's been great. Well, until next week, everybody, may God bless you and keep you, and may you fully become the person you're designed to be. Thanks, folks. That was fun. We got to do it again.
Bye. Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Julie. Bye.
Bye, everybody. Safe trip out there, Miss Beth in California. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.